Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A magnificent Monday to you. So glad that you're with me once again for what promises to be another great week on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free line to call to talk to me for free. 888-914-9149. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Show account is at Cale Clark Show. You can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Great place to send questions, show ideas. And we got a great show idea, which we're going to actually execute, Lord willing, later in the show. I told you last week about Jared Veldier, former NFL offensive lineman, who is now serving. He's basically running the cafeteria in his kids' Catholic school in Michigan. It's a great story. It went viral. There was an article about him in the Washington Post. He's going to be joining me live on the program later today. We've got lots of fun stuff to talk about, so don't miss that interview coming up. But today is also, of course, it is January the 24th. You know what that means? It's the Feast of St. Francis de Sales. A very popular saint, very much loved by the ladies. St. Francis of Sales. He's the patron saint of shopping. St. Francis de Sales. Okay. Pretty lame joke there, but yeah, there you go. Starting off with a bang already. But St. Francis de Sales, all kidding aside, is one of the great saints of the church. I'm a huge fan of his. And if you've never read his book, The Introduction to the Devout Life, it's an incredible read. And it holds up centuries later. And in fact, I was once assigned it for spiritual reading by my spiritual director. And I'm so glad I read it. It was just incredible. St. Francis de Sales was an amazing preacher. The images that he uses in the book, I would have loved to have listened to his homilies live, because no doubt he would have been a great communicator of the gospel. He talks about Christ like an owl. It's just stuff you'd never think of. It's just amazing. And he wrote this book, The Introduction to the Devout Life. It was basically spiritual direction that took place through letter writing. And obviously, back in those days, there was no FaceTime, no telephones even. So a lot of spiritual direction took place through writing letters back and forth to your spiritual director. So the book is really a series of spiritual conversations that he has with his directee, who is a housewife. And he expected her to reach the heights of holiness. Believe me, he wasn't passing on information about where the latest sales are. He wasn't simply the patron saint of shopping, St. Francis de Sales. No, he wanted her to be a canonizable saint. And this was considered heretical at the time by a lot of people, his writings. But he's been proven right by history. And in fact, the Second Vatican Council, and really, I guess you could say the great theme of Vatican II was the universal call to holiness. That once again, the church reminds us of something that was always true, but maybe through the centuries, the church maybe had forgotten, some quarters of the church had forgotten that all of us, by virtue of our baptism, are called to be saints. It's not just for clerics. It's not just for priests. It's not just for nuns. It's not just for those called to the religious life. They have to be saints too, but all of us do, wherever we may find ourselves. And so that's the universal vocation of holiness. St. Francis de Sales was really a guy who kind of started to bring that back into the public consciousness. Well, he was born in 1567. He factored in huge, by the way. This is the Protestant Reformation was raging across Europe at the time. And he was one of the great saints of what we might call the Counter-Reformation, trying to bring Catholics back to the church. And were there problems in the church back then? Absolutely there were. There were a lot of abuses going on. And some of the things that Martin Luther, who really touched off the Protestant Revolution in 1517 by nailing his 95 theses to the castle, to the church of the door of the castle church in Wittenberg, that really kind of touched things off. And he had some legitimate complaints, and the church was trying to deal with those internally. And at the end of the day, Luther thought that he could deal with things better by breaking off from the church entirely. And I think he got very radical the further he went on. And so the movement he started became known as Lutheranism, but that didn't go far enough for some people, like John Calvin. And Calvin kind of separated from Luther and his group and started his own movement, which came to be known as Calvinism. And it was to Calvinism, really, that St. Francis de Sales responded with a lot of his work. But let me just tell you about his upbringing, because I think some of you guys might be able to identify with this. He was born in France in 1567. And Michael Heinlein had wrote an introduction to his life as kind of a preface for the book, The Introduction to the Devout Life. And he notes that his dad, Francis de Sales' father, kind of had his life planned out for him from the very beginning. Maybe some of you out there have had that experience. Your parents kind of said, this is what you're going to do. This is the school that you're going to go to. This is how it's going to be. So he planned for Francis to be part of the nobility, and that was kind of the world that he came from. He wanted him to be a lawyer. It was all set up. You know, forgetting the fact that Jesus said, woe to you lawyers. No, he didn't mean it like that. But Francis's father wanted him to have a career in law. And eventually he wanted him to become a judge, to become a magistrate. Now, his father may have had some plans for him, but certainly his heavenly father had a few more. And so, but his academic training went really, really well early in life. He went to a special school. I guess today would be the equivalent of a prestigious private school for noblemen or aspiring noblemen, the sons of noblemen. And he studied philosophy, he studied rhetoric, how to make a persuasive speech, and he certainly did that as a preacher, and he certainly used that in his writing as well. He studied theology. He eventually went to a college that was run by the Jesuits in Paris. So he got a degree in 1584. He went on to get two master's degrees, as if that wasn't enough. Kept on growing, kept on studying, got his doctorate, basically his PhD in law in Padua, Italy in the year 1591. And just like today, you have to kind of defend your thesis. So when he was defending his doctoral thesis in law, he was kind of cross-examined by 48 professors, and they were all blown away by Francis de Sales. The way that he would speak, his rhetoric, his persuasiveness, his ideas, his intellect. It was as clear, as sharp, and as bright as a diamond. And they were like, wow, they were just blown away. Now, because of his well-to-do background, every place that he went and every place that he went to study, Francis was accompanied by a servant. He had his own kind of butler with him, kind of like Batman and Alfred, I guess. And he also had a priest who would accompany him and provide for his spiritual needs and also serve as his tutor. He was obviously a very learned priest. But that wasn't all. He was kind of a Renaissance man, Francis de Sales. He had lessons in dancing. He could ballroom dance with the best of them. He would get involved with fencing. He learned how to fence. He learned how to box, even, believe it or not. And he went into some equestrian pursuits as well. Jumping, dressage, you know, riding horses, essentially. And that's hey, the equestrian events at the Olympics. Think about that. So this is kind of highfalutin stuff. This is very much, you know, the elite of society we're talking about here. But as he was doing this, as he was pursuing all his grad studies, Calvinism, you know, Protestantism was raging across Europe, and formerly Catholic lands were becoming Protestant, especially where Francis found himself. France, Geneva, and a lot of public debates, a lot of argument was happening between Catholics and Calvinists, especially in Paris when he was studying there. And for a little while there, Francis de Sales was kind of buying into the Calvinist doctrine. Now, if you don't know much about the Calvinist form of Protestantism, they're really hardcore Calvinists. They have what's called five-point Calvinism, and it's sometimes the acronym TULIP is used. I don't know if you've ever heard that expression, the word TULIP. And this kind of is a way for people to memorize some of Calvin's teachings. And it's a little bit simplistic because Calvin was a highly complex thinker, but so it's a bit of a summary of his thought. But the T in TULIP stands for total depravity, and this is the idea that you can't do anything good without God. Now, we as Catholics would disagree with that. We would say that even if people are not in a state of grace, there's still natural goodness there are good things that people can do, even if they're living apart from God. There is actual goodness in the world. Now, you need God, of course, so you got to add that to the picture. But so that's what the T stands for, this idea of total depravity, this Protestant idea, this Calvinistic idea. The U stands for unconditional election. And this kind of, you might have heard about predestination. So Calvinists believe in something called double predestination, that God chooses the elect that are going to go to heaven. They're going to be saved. They're elected by God. They're going to go. And then there's also those who aren't going to make it, the damned, and God predestines them to damnation under this point of view. Again, this is not a Catholic idea. The church would really have a problem with this idea that there are people that are predestined to hell. God does not want that for anybody. He desires everybody, as St. Paul says in the New Testament, to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. So anyways, the U in TULIP stands for this unconditional election. God chooses people to be saved no matter what they did. The L stands for limited atonement. This idea that Christ only died for the elect, for those who are going to heaven. That, again, not the case. That the Catholic Church says absolutely not. He died for all people. Now, do all people take advantage of that? Do all people get in on that? No, because they have free will and they choose not to. They reject God, but that's another story. So the L is limited atonement. The I stands for irresistible grace, this concept that you can't resist God's grace. And the P in TULIP stands for the perseverance of the saints. And that basically means that if you're part of the elect, you can never lose your salvation. You will always be saved. You can't lose. Now, again, the Catholic Church would say people can lose their salvation. We have free will. We can fall into mortal sin, what the Bible calls deadly sin, where it cuts off this relationship with God, like turning off the tap. So you need to have the sacrament of confession to get back in. So there is the drama of salvation. You can lose your salvation. So anyways, this TULIP idea, the ideas of Calvin, these were things that St. Francis de Sales was thinking about. This was really touching his own life. Calvinism was sweeping across Paris while he was there. And for a little while, Francis de Sales became convinced of this idea of predestination. So he started thinking, well, maybe I'm not one of the elect. Maybe I'm not really saved. Maybe I'm not really going to heaven after all. And so he started to get spiritually depressed about this. It was a really dark time. So this is around the year 1586. And for about 2 months, he was just a wreck. He was emotionally exhausted. He was physically exhausted. And you know this, if this has ever happened to you, if you're having kind of a spiritual struggle, it can kind of manifest physically sometimes. You feel tired if you're stressed out spiritually, if you're going through a spiritual battle, it can really affect you physically. And that's what happened to St. Francis de Sales. And kind of what cured him, I guess he could say, is that he went to a famous chapel in Paris. It was dedicated to Our Lady. It was under her title of Our Lady of Good Deliverance. And this is really providential because Francis de Sales was kind of delivered from his issues. And while he's in that chapel, he decided to abandon himself to God's will. And he said, look, I'm just going to trust you, Lord. Jesus, I trust in you, I guess he could say. No matter what happens, I'm going to just give myself to you and I'm going to ask Our Lady to pray for me. And so while he was in that church, he found an inscription of that famous prayer, and we pray it a lot on Relevant Radio, for an end to abortion, the Memorare, that famous prayer that was composed by St. Bernard of Clairvaux. He found an inscription of this on the wall of the chapel, and when he prayed this prayer, he felt immediate peace, immediate relief. And he, from that point on, he was trusting in the intercession of Our Lady, and he prayed this prayer every single day of his life going forward. Well, it was around this time also that St. Francis discerned a call to the priesthood. And again, his dad did not want him. His own human father did not want him to enter the priesthood. But he kind of felt like, and I think this is true of a lot of people who are called to the priesthood from just conversations I've had with priests, that for a lot of guys, sometimes they discover the call later in life. But a lot of them knew as a child that they were called to the priesthood. And it's funny how that works sometimes. But Francis really thought when he was a kid, maybe God's calling me to the priesthood. But again, his father didn't want him to. He wanted him to become a lawyer. He kept his secret. So, and he was trying to be obedient to his father. It was kind of a way of obeying the fourth commandment. He said, okay, I'm going to do what my dad thinks is best for me right now. And I think there's a lot of merit in that. And Francis walked away from his career in law. And this did not make his dad happy at all. Because his dad, believe it or not, his dad actually bought him a house. He bought him an estate. Not bad. He bought him a law library, all these books. He even set up a marriage for St. Francis de Sales. Yep. He arranged a marriage for him with the daughter of a prominent judge. Also good for his... Hopefully she was attractive to him, but certainly a lot of it was for his future career prospects, to be sure. But Francis said, I'm walking away from all this stuff. His mother, thankfully, was in his corner, but his dad was really upset by this. And when his father passed away some years later, the two of them, unfortunately, never really reconciled. So eventually, one thing leads to another. He becomes ordained as a priest. He becomes eventually the Bishop of Geneva. And he just did a lot of cool stuff trying to attract Catholics back to the faith who had wandered away from the church, who had really become enamored with these teachings of John Calvin. They'd kind of gone over to Protestantism. And how did he do it? Again, in this ancient, well, not really ancient age, this was in, you know, the 1500s, 16th century, but he did it the old-fashioned way, preaching. And he also did a lot of writing. He would write these pamphlets, these little tracts, and he would slip them under the doors of people, under the homes of people who had gone over to Calvinism. And they were basically documents, little teachings, explaining the Catholic faith in a way that people could understand in everyday language. And that's kind of what we try to do here on Relevant Radio. And so he was so successful at this that about two-thirds of the population of the region where he lived, it was the region of Chablais, they came back to the church. They came back to the church. It was kind of a Catholic revival. And none of this was really pleasing to his enemies, to all the Calvinists in the region. They basically wanted him dead. And he came really close to martyrdom on more than one occasion. He was forced to live in like this abandoned barracks, this garrison. It was really tough. He was in poor health. It was cold. There was one time he was chased by a pack of wild wolves that he literally had to sleep the entire night in a tree because these wolves were going to kill him and tear him to shreds. So he really did have to sacrifice to share the gospel. And even during this time, even as so many Catholics were coming back to the faith, his old doubts returned as well. He started having doubts that were kind of placed in his mind by the Calvinists. Like maybe Jesus isn't really present in the Eucharist. And that should make you and me a little bit more, hopefully that's encouraging to us in a strange way, because even the saints sometimes had periods where they were struggling spiritually, and maybe even while they were doing ministry, as they're involved in sharing the faith with others, they had their own issues and maybe little doubts. And not only that, his father cut off, who was still alive at the time, his father cut off all material assistance to him, no money, nothing. He was just basically going on divine providence at this point. So anyways, he eventually became bishop, as I mentioned, and one of the things he said was the first duty of the bishop is to teach. He really wanted people to get back to the basics, and he used to say for priests, St. Francis de Sales said this of priests. He said, for priests, the eighth sacrament is kind of like continuing education. He said, it's continuing to learn. It's continuing to study. You've got to study so that you can impart some stuff to the people because, you know, it's if your light is not burning, there's no way people are going to catch the fire from you. So again, his great spiritual writing is something that we always remember, the Introduction to the Devout Life. He wrote a lot of other great stuff as well and did a lot of stuff that we don't have time to talk about right now. But I do want to say this. As he was laying on his deathbed, he had suffered a stroke. Just before he died, a nun came to him who was looking after him, and she was kind of begging him. She knew he was dying. Can you give me some advice? She knew that this guy was a living saint. Please give me some advice. And he was very, very weak, but she gave him a pen and some paper. And his advice was very, very simple. He wrote three times on the page, one word, humility. Humility, humility, humility. That was his advice. So he died on December the 28th, 1622 in Lyon in France, was canonized not too long after that in 1665. And he was named a doctor of the church by Pope Pius IX in 1877. So pretty cool. The universal call to holiness. St. Francis de Sales wrote about it. Read his book, Introduction to the Devout Life. It's awesome spiritual reading. It's great stuff. It's feast day today. St. Francis, please pray for us. I'll be right back after this quick break, and I'll be joined by Jared Veldier. You will not want to miss this conversation. Be right back. Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Welcome back to the program on this Monday, and joining me right now is a man who recently went viral thanks to articles written about him in ESPN and also in the Washington Post, talking about how he went from being an NFL star to serving up soul food at his kids' Catholic school. Now, during his career, he played one of the NFL's most demanding and indispensable positions on the offensive line. An 11-year career with the Raiders, the Cardinals, the Denver Broncos, the Green Bay Packers, and the Indianapolis Colts. He's now the director of the SPA 68 Cafe, which is an homage to his jersey number in the NFL, number 68. And SPA stands for St. Paul the Apostle Catholic School in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And joining me from his home in Grand Rapids is Jared Veldier. Jared, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking the time. How are you?
I'm good, Cale. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And Jared, just before we get into the Washington Post piece, which we just talked about a little bit on the program last week, tell me a little bit about your background. You're kind of, to use a superhero term, your origin story. You find yourself in Grand Rapids now. It's a bit of a homecoming for you, isn't it?
Yeah, so I grew up here and, you know, moved about the country for the various teams that I played for. And it was actually in 2017 when we were living in Arizona that we kind of decided that, hey, when football's all done, we want to be back in Grand Rapids. So We bought a house back here and we're finally able to settle in here full time a couple of years ago and really immerse ourselves in the community. And St. Paul's has been the catalyst for, strengthening and developing relationships here in West Michigan. Because when you move away for a decade, you come back and, you know, things are a little different. All of a sudden, yeah. Married, have two kids, and, it's just a little different. But it's been a blessing.
That's incredible. And obviously, your career, you retired in 2021 in the spring. You retired a couple times before, but for the last time in the spring of 2021. And you've taken on this new challenge at the school of running the cafe. It's now called the SPA 68 Cafe. How did this all come about? Is it true that the former director of the cafeteria just kind of walked away 2 weeks before school started?
No, so it wasn't 2 weeks before school started. It was, I kind of took the position when it was a couple weeks before school starting.
Okay.
It wasn't, the school was not in dire straits, because of anybody. There's just a vacancy in the position, and that's kind of when my interest peaked for it, and just decided to dive on in.
That's fantastic. And your first order of business, according to the Washington Post, is, hey, no more greasy pizza slices, no more fried stuff. You chucked it. And it sounds like that the parents kind of have to order the food ahead of time so you know what to make. And the first time they saw the potential menu, a lot of them were probably asking the question, is my kid really going to eat this stuff? Tell me about some of the menu items you have, like chimichurri steak flanks and stuff like that. That sounds delicious to me, but maybe for kids it might be a hard sell. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and that's our Wednesday. Our Wednesday is like a World Wednesday is what we call it, where it's, cuisine from different parts of the world. And those are kind of the off the wall days where we throw in things like chimichurri flank steak or beef bulgogi. And, we make sure to put some kid friendly staples like, the old spaghetti and meatballs or, teriyaki chicken, that kind of stuff. So, some kid friendly things in there as well. But last week we did a beef shawarma that the kids really enjoyed. And, it's cool to be able to, serve Middle Eastern food and, get kids that are, preschool through eighth grade, not so afraid of foods that are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's great. I take people on tours to the Holy Land often, well, at least when there's not a worldwide pandemic happening. And I love getting people to try that stuff, like shawarma and Middle Eastern stuff. And so I think that's great. And so when I was, so Jared, I got to tell you, when I told my wife I was going to interview you today on the program, she was so excited. She said, "Hey, this guy makes healthy food that kindergartners will eat. You know, send me those recipes, please." And I thought, you know, better yet, Jared, maybe you and I should collaborate on a cookbook. We could call it, you know, From the Gridiron to the Grill or something like that. I don't know. I think it's a pretty good title. What do you think?
Yeah, that's solid. And that's something that that has been floated around a little bit, is being able to put some of this to paper and get it out there. There should just be a massive disclaimer, like on the first page, that says best served to young kids, with an option to put ketchup on it, because it seems like that's what the especially the preschoolers, man, they go for the ketchup bottle almost daily. And so I'm just used to putting it out on their table at this point. And if it gets them to eat the food, then that's great. So.
Yeah, and by the way, for people that don't know, you're listening to the Cale Clark program, the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guest is Jared Belladier, former NFL offensive lineman. You're a pretty big dude. You're 6'8", in your playing days, you're over 330. I've heard also that you tend to walk the cafeteria, and I'm not saying you intimidate the kids, but you might ask them the question, hey, you are going to eat that, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, when I open it up for kids to come back and get more, and if they're coming back to get more and they haven't touched something on their plate yet, I'll give them a tough time about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let me ask you this, Jared. Was cooking something that you did, like, sort of your whole life, or is nutrition something you really got into when you're playing in the NFL?
Yeah, I think nutrition is something that I've always been fascinated with. I was a biology major at Hillsdale College, and I wanted to go become a doctor or go into research when I was done. So I took the pre-med route, and obviously things changed when the whole NFL thing came into the picture. But you know, science has always been a fascination of mine. And so when I was playing collegially and professionally, I always, you know, looked at how I could use nutrition as, a tool to maximize my abilities on the field. And, you know, I just learned a tremendous amount through that. And a lot of it, the principles correlate to just human performance in general, not necessarily, you know, being able to, you know, stop a pass rusher on a Sunday, but to, you know, just be as nourished and healthy as possible.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, if you're not putting good fuel on your body, even as a school-age kid, you're not going to be able to think well, you're not going to be able to learn well. Most of us, and listen, Jared, I got to tell you, when I was watching my beloved Buffalo Bills lose to the Chiefs, unfortunately, last night, I have to admit...
Heartbreaker. Oh,
it was a heartbreaker. And I want to ask you about this weekend's games in just a second, but I must admit, I'm one of these guys. I ate more than my fair share of chicken wings and pizza yesterday, so shame on me. But if you're somebody who's out there and you're this is kind of resonating with you, and you're thinking, man, I want to start. Like, where do you start? If you want to turn your life around nutritionally speaking and maybe eat healthier and provide healthier meals for your family, what do you suggest people do?
I think you really need to learn how to read a label and what goes into that food. Because you can go to the health food store or the health aisle or whatever, and you can pick up some really junky stuff. And you can just be, you know, in the regular old food aisle and find something that's great. There's a lot of misleading advertising on food. And just as a rule of thumb, you know, being able to go through and just spot ingredients that you don't want to have in your pantry is huge. And then on top of that, to make it even more simple, just the more whole unprocessed foods that you consume, you know, the better your diet is going to be.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, there's a lot of marketing involved, as there is in a lot of things. And something that, as you said, something that may be labeled as health food may not, in fact, be. That's a good point. Always read the labels.
Yeah, and there's so much in the Western diet that centers around polyunsaturated fatty acids, and those are found predominantly in the oils that are used in shelf-stable processed food items. And even in, you know, salad dressings, whatever, they're easily available to food companies. And, you know, these food they're companies, they're businesses. So they're looking at a bottom line, and unfortunately that doesn't always have your health in mind. And so they're going to use ingredients that are going to be cheaper to get a hold of. And a lot of times those are high in those omega sixes, which are the polyunsaturated fatty acids, and Western diets tend to be really skewed in favor of those omega sixes. And when your omega six to omega three ratio gets out of whack, in favor of those sixes, then you become really susceptible to having high levels of inflammation just from your diet. And, you know, as most of us know, inflammation is kind of the key that ignites, you know, a lot of dysfunction within the body.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that you said that, because, like, reading some of Tom Brady's stuff, obviously he's been promoting the TB12 method, and a lot of people think this is quackery. What's your take on all this? Because I know he talks a lot about anti-inflammatory foods and things like that. What do you think of his methodology in terms of exercise, pliability, and the kind of diet that he's trying to promote?
I mean, just look at what he's doing at the age of 44. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, and that's if this diet plays into how he's able to perform, then that's a true testament to what he's putting out there.
Yeah.
You know, I saw him, you know, take shots where guys are just taking out his knees and ankles yesterday, and he gets back up, no problem, leads the league in touchdown passes. It's pretty unbelievable. And, you know, I think there's a lot to it. And like I said, you know, you have to be really, you know, thoughtful and shop with intention and cook with intention if you want to eat and live that way, because if you don't, you're probably just going to pick up some stuff that has a lot of things that you don't know are in there, but are in there, and they're going to have some negative consequences for your health down the road.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, just look at the guys. You said the proof is in the pudding. I mean, he looks younger now to me than when he came into the league. If you saw a picture of this guy and he said this guy's 28 years old, you'd probably believe it if you didn't know who he was. I mean, it's just incredible what he's been able to do. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. My guest is Jared Belldier, former NFL lineman. And Jared, I got to get your reactions to, speaking of Tom Brady, the games this past weekend. Let's start there with the Bucs and the Rams. I mean, Brady was kind of like Bruce Lee for a little while there, tasting his own blood. He got hit by Von Miller. He's bleeding. He's complaining to the refs. He gets an unsportsmanlike penalty. That never happens to him. What was your take on that game? Did that surprise you at all that the Bucs went down to the Rams?
Yeah. What didn't surprise me was how the Bucs came back and tied it up there with a minute left to play. I was happy to see it. Made for an amazing game to watch. But, you know, it's the NFL playoffs, and, you know, you definitely have to show up for all four quarters. It's really hard to, you know, kind of sleepwalk through a half and win the game.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, and the games, as Brady himself said before this game, they just keep getting harder from this point every game as you go through the playoffs. And let's go now to a team that you used to play with, the Green Bay Packers. Obviously, I'm not going to say it was a shocking loss for the Packers. Obviously, the Niners have had their number the last few times that they played in the playoffs. And you played with Aaron Rodgers. Were you surprised at the lack of offensive output by the Packers against the Niners?
Yeah, especially after the first two drives. You know, really after that big turnover on the second drive, I think that gave a lot of life to San Francisco, because it looked like that game was going to be out of hand after the first quarter. And, you know, if you let a team stick around with you and be competitive, then, you know, you're asking for disaster, and that's what happened. I mean, San Francisco beat them scoring no offensive touchdowns, which is crazy, in Lambeau on a cold night.
I know.
There has to be a part of, you know, the 49ers just living in the heads of the personnel in Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like they felt more at home on the frozen tundra than the Packers did. The cold didn't seem to bother them at all. And so, yeah, there may have been something psychological there. I don't know, but I must confess, I was pretty shocked that game wasn't more competitive, and that Aaron Rodgers didn't do more in that game. How do you see his future playing out? You know this guy a little bit. Do you think he's going to stick around?
I have to imagine his number one goal is to win a Super Bowl at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's shown that he can be the league MVP, put up amazing numbers and stats, be a great leader of an offense. you know, show grit in the face of adversity, all of those things. And to have no, you know, to, you know, only have, I think he only has one Super Bowl ring. And I think, you know, he'd like to end on a high note. So if, you know, if he meets with the brass in Green Bay these next couple weeks and they can, you know, formulate a plan that assures him that, you know, they're on that track and they can get over that hurdle, then I think he stays. But you never know how those meetings are going to go, what's going to be said, and what's going to happen. So, you know, it's fair game. It's speculation, but you know, I think he's pretty vested in that team, in that franchise. So I'd have to give them the benefit of the doubt in the equation and say that he probably sticks around at Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, they'd in some ways be very foolish to let him go. I mean, he's probably going to win another MVP, probably going to be back-to-back MVP after this season. And I'm not sure that Jordan Love is ready to take the reins at this point for the Packers. Well, how about the Bills in Kansas City? My Bills lost in heartbreaking fashion. It was an instant classic. I mean, Josh Allen couldn't have done more. He just didn't get a chance to get the ball back. Are you a fan of the fact that if you win a coin flip, you can go down? And this happened to the Chiefs, too, a few years ago against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. Tom Brady went down and scored, and Mahomes never got to get the ball back in overtime. What do you think of that rule? Should that be changed? And what were your impressions of the game overall?
Yeah. Talking about the rule first, I think it would be excellent to see some kind of overtime format, especially in the playoffs, that kind of mimics how collegiate football works. Mm-hmm. You know, where both teams get a chance from, you know, a certain yard line on in and, you know, let the dice fall from there. You know, that way at least it gives, you know, both teams a shot instead of it coming down to whoever's lucky enough to win the coin flip.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And then,
go ahead.
Yeah, and then on the flip side, I mean, that game was unbelievable. You know, Josh Allen had a monster game, but how about Gabriel Davis had four touchdowns, set a playoff record for the NFL. I mean, not even Jerry Rice had four touchdown receptions in a playoff game, and he did that and lost. It's absolutely bonkers.
But it really is.
The one thing from that though is the defense for the Bills was one of the best defenses in the NFL, and they couldn't get Kansas City off the field, you know, late in the game. And you know, if you're truly a great defense, you have to show up in those big moments in the playoffs. You can't just, you know, let a team run right through you, you know, because a couple of their players are hot and on fire.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And some people are saying, you know, when there was 13 seconds left in the game, the Bills had taken the lead again. It looked like it was over. Maybe they should have squib kicked it on the kickoff or made them at least return it, take some time off the clock. But at the end of the day, like, you have to stop them, and they just didn't do that. Playing in this defensive shell was kind of like more of a prevent defense. It allowed them to get into field goal range, and you got to hand it to Butker. He made the kick. He's a Catholic guy, actually. He's a practicing Catholic. He made the kick. But I wasn't really happy for him because I'm a Bills fan, and it was really heartbreaking. But hey, do you think that the Bengals, having beaten the Titans, that was a bit of a surprise as well. Do you think they have any shot at Kansas City in the AFC Championship game?
I mean, they just beat Kansas City a few weeks ago, but I don't know how well that's going to bode for them, because you got Kansas City licking their chops right now and wanting some revenge, and the only thing that's between them and the Super Bowl is the Bengals. So I have to think the Chiefs are going to be back in the Super Bowl.
Okay, who do you think they're going to play?
I think they're going to play the Rams.
Rams, okay. All right. And who do you see taking home the Lombardi?
I think the Chiefs are going to be Super Bowl champs.
All right, okay. So take it to Vegas. Jared Belt here has given his pick.
You think, do not take it to Vegas. I'm notoriously bad with picks. So you might want to just take the opposite of all my picks.
Take
the Bengals. All of it.
Well, I tell you, I can empathize. I was 0-4 this past weekend. My record has taken a big, big hit. And speaking of hits, this is kind of an awkward segue, but one thing that obviously has been at the forefront of everybody's mind in terms of the NFL has been head injuries, CTE. And I really want to get your thoughts on this, Jared. So can you hang with me really quickly? We got to take a quick break here. Can you hang with me for just a couple more minutes?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, fantastic. We're going to take a quick break right here on the Cale Clark Show. We'll be right back with Jared Veld here, 888-914-9149. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. I'm joined today by former NFL lineman Jared Veld here. It kind of went viral because of an article in the Washington Post. He's running the cafeteria at his kids' Catholic school in Grand Rapids, Michigan, helping them to make healthier choices in life. That brain-body connection is crucial for education. And it's also crucial in terms of football. Something that's been in the public consciousness for the last few years has been the impact of CTE, traumatic brain injuries in NFL players. We're learning more and more about that. Obviously, it's a high-velocity, high-contact sport, especially for people who played your position on the offensive line. And I know, Jared, on Twitter, on your Twitter account, when Antonio Brown, who last played, of course, for the Buccaneers, had that very bizarre incident in New York where he ran off the field, took off his shirt, and it just some of the strange behavior he's been exhibiting over the last few years. One of the things that you tweeted about was that you were 1,000% sure, you said, that he has CTE. How widespread of a problem do you think this is in the NFL?
It's definitely a concern, and it's just tough because, again, a player's going to have to be, you know, really vigilant on their health to watch out for any kind of, you know, brain injury, because at the end of the day, the NFL just can't, from a business standpoint, say that this is a problem within the sport, because then you're done. Like the game of football's done with it. Mm-hmm. And they can't, you know, have their product out there anymore, because that's just what happens with it. You know, I think there's a lot of protocols that could be implemented, and a lot more that goes into being proactive. But then again, to get into that, then you'd have to say, well, we're doing that because there's this big problem, and they don't want to say there's a mm-hmm. big problem.
Do you worry about that yourself personally? Obviously, being an offensive lineman, maybe taking some repetitive injuries to the head. Is that something that you worry about personally?
Yeah, a little bit. And one of the reasons is, you know, just doing some of the genetic testing that's available now, you know, you can see your likelihood of, not likelihood, but you can see if you're at an increased risk of Alzheimer's, and that's through the APOE4 gene variant. And so you have two of these alleles, and I tested for one of them, which increased my likelihood to develop Alzheimer's. And so I kind of dove into that, and what it meant was I wasn't quite as good at clearing out, you know, the plaque and tangles from suffering any kind of traumatic brain injury, you know, if it's large scale or small scale. So, you know, I knew there's going to be a little more on my part that I'd have to do to make sure I was taking care of my brain, and really dove into some of the things that you can do to mitigate some of those odds of developing it later in life. But there's a lot of guys that probably have no idea. And there's guys out there that I'm sure are playing, and they have both APOE4 alleles, and that would be a dangerous thing to play with.
Well, let me ask you this, Jared. What can you do? What can you do at this point to try to – you said there's some things that you can do to try to heal your brain a little bit. What are some of those things?
Again, going back to, you know, making sure that you're mitigating inflammation in the body. You know, because the brain is very susceptible to that inflammation, and if it can't clean out that inflammation, then you're in trouble. Sleep is huge. You know, getting good quality sleep. I track my sleep with, you know, a Whoop strap, where, you know, I get, you know, all my REM data, all of that good stuff. It factors into, you know, a recovery score along with some other metrics. But you know, just making sure that you're disciplined with sleeping, not only the right amount of hours, but sleeping, you know, getting good quality sleep during those hours, you know, not having light in the bedroom, you know, not watching, you know, the Die Hard movies right before you're going to bed where you're all amped up.
Oh, come on.
Or, you know, letting your mind race from a busy day, you know, being able to clear your mind before you go to sleep, that kind of stuff. Sleep's very important. And then, you know, there's some cool stuff. You know, I was listening to a neurosurgeon who works with some former Navy SEAL guys who had experienced a lot of traumatic brain injury over the course of their military career. And it was really impacting, you know, their life to the point where, you know, these guys were, you know, contemplating suicide. Like they were at, you know, the very bottom of it and just felt like they couldn't function anymore. And he started developing a protocol that was really high in fish oil to kind of heal the brain. And fish oil is extremely high in omega-3 fatty acids. And, you know, kind of goes into what I was talking earlier with the Western diet being skewed in favor of omega-6s. You know, not only do omega-3s provide some kind of anti-inflammatory effect, but they're also really good for brain repair and brain health in general. There's a lot of components to it that are really sound for nourishing the brain.
That is all really fascinating information. And believe me, I was writing notes frantically as you were talking there, because listen, I need all the brain cells I can get, and I want to keep them myself too. Well, and the other thing too that and you'll probably identify with this too as a lineman. I mean, you were kind of, there's lots of memes of you on the internet as kind of like the Incredible Hulk, because despite your size, 6'8", 330, you weren't exactly the typical offensive lineman in the NFL, and that you were kind of more chiseled, didn't have the pot belly. But I don't know if you know Duke Manyweather, the guy who does a lot of offensive line training, but I saw a video of this guy, and he asked a bunch of offensive linemen in a conference, how many of you guys have a problem with snoring? And pretty much every guy raised their hand. He really recommended, you got to get a CPAP machine. That'll help you sleep. Probably a lot of you guys have sleep apnea and you don't even know it. I have sleep apnea. I recently discovered it. So I echo what Jared is saying here. Your sleep is super, super important. It's something that we really neglect. And it is part of being spiritual. It's taking care of yourself. It's taking care of your body. And there is that mind-body-spirit connection that I think is really important for people to know about. So just got a couple minutes with you left, Jared. I'm with Jared Veld here, former NFL lineman. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and I want to do a whole show about this later on, because so many people are asking me about this, and I'm trying to learn myself about cryptocurrency. I noticed on your Twitter handle, is it jared.eth or jaredveldhere.eth? Explain what the ETH means and what cryptocurrency is. I don't know if you can do that in layman's terms or not, but get us started with that.
Yeah, so the handle is jaredveldhere.eth, and basically that's an ENS address, so an Ethereum address. A lot of times when you look at wallet addresses for crypto, it's just a big string of numbers and letters, and there's a service now, an Ethereum service that allows you to basically, instead of having a DNS domain, like, you know, your basic website, now there's an ENS domain where it links to your wallet address. So NFTs are really big right now, and so that kind of plays into that. It just makes it easier to broadcast an address, to send, receive, that kind of stuff. Not necessarily am I using that to put it out there, but more so just trying to drive adoption and awareness with just a cool piece of technology that's emerging. And then, you know, just crypto as a whole has so much going on. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people out there have heard about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is excellent. It's really, you know, a modern day marvel of how it was constructed. You know, it could give anybody living on this planet, you know, financial power over their own asset. And that's tough because you have a lot of unbanked people in third world countries. But if you have a $15, you know, phone and you have access to the internet somewhere, and you can hop on the Wi-Fi, then you can transact with Bitcoin or with, you know, other cryptocurrencies. And, you know, Bitcoin has a scarcity aspect and a demand aspect that makes it valuable. as well as a lot of other things. You know, it's one of those that, you know, you're constantly learning about.
Yeah.
There's no way I could give a synopsis in 5 minutes that would be able to tell enough about it, or nor am I qualified to do so.
Yeah, exactly.
Jared,
I feel like we need to slap a disclaimer on this and say, you know, it's one of these not financial advice type segments, but promise me this, my man, you'll come back sometime. We'll talk a little bit more about cryptocurrency, because I am so fascinated by this field. And I know there's a pro argument and a con argument. And I really would love to chop it up with you a little bit more about that in the future. But Jared, we got to get out. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of the program, but thank you so much for taking the time, man. God bless you and your family. And thanks for all the good work that you're doing to promote nutrition and awareness about all these things that we talked about today. So thanks so much, Jared. God bless you.
Thank you for having me on, Cal. I appreciate it. It was good talking.
Absolutely. And we will post that article in the show notes from the Washington Post. Jared Valdir, if you need him. Wow, that was a fun interview. That was a really fun interview. Really enjoyed talking to Jared. And I hope you enjoy the program as well. We will be back tomorrow, as always, on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Lucas Holt produced. Lucas is now the leader, by the way, in our playoff pool. Patrick Alok, he'll be back on Wednesday. He went 0-4 last weekend. I went 0-4. Lucas went 2-2, so he's taking the lead. He's now 6-4. The rest of us are 5-5. For whatever it's worth. Well, we try to be a little bit more than average on the show and in our Catholic lives as well. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.